one click, to check the gauges and controls. Ryan knew that she had the best night vision, so it made sense for her to drive the WAG. Headlights would only have made them a moving target for the flintlocks of the Ville SecMen, or worse, any cannon the Ville might have mounted for wall defenses. Dim lights brightened on the dashboard, and Christie tapped the fuel gauge with a finger to make sure it was a true reading.
Okay, we have plenty of battery power and full tanks of juice.
Head for the docks. Glassman has PT boats there. If we strike fast, we might be able to steal one and use its firebirds to blow the others apart.
Sounds good. Buckle in. Here we go.
Christie clicked the ignition switch all the way, and the engine turned over, but didn't start. Then she saw the choke on the dashboard, set that to the middle position, pumped the gas, and tried again. This time the engines caught with a sputtering cough, rattling and backfiring before roaring into life, black smoke blowing out the tailpipes. Startled birds flew out of the trees screaming as the bus backfired again, sounding louder than a shotgun.
Unless they're deaf, the segment will know where we are now. Hit the gas and let's move!
Shifting gears, Christie hit the clutch and rocked the bus back and forth a few times to escape the sand, then rolled forward, building speed, and plowed through the camo netting to emerge on a rocky beach. The log wall of Rotuckville stood on a gentle swell to their right, the dock straight ahead. A four-masted schooner was moored in the deep water, six of the deadly PT boats tied at the wooden pier. An oil lantern draped with cloth hung from a post, giving off a peculiar green glow. A seasoned traveler on ships, Doc had no idea what that could possibly mean. Keeping the headlights off, using only the muted moonlight, Christie rumbled along the sandy beach, the ocean spray misting the windows on the left side. Quickly, the companions got ready to storm and board the first PD. But the bus got only halfway there when brilliant electric lights crashed on to sweep the beach and captured them in a deadly wash of clear illumination. Ryan fired the Steyr out of blaster port at the searchlights, and one winked out. Instantly, the 50-caliber blasters from the PT boats began to hammer away, the heavy-duty combat rounds chewing a path of destruction along the sand toward the war wag. Then another PD added its firepower to the assault, and another.
Gaia!
Christie hit the gas and twisted the steering wheel to get away from the withering crossfire. But she was too slow, and a brief flurry of lead rattled the wag, punching a neat line of holes through the sheet metal covering the windows. Then there was a flash from the schooner, and a cannon roared, the beach exploding exactly where they had just been.
It's a trap!
JB fired the Uzi out of blaster port at the crews of the PT boats. Several of the men toppled over, but more took their places, and the incoming barrage of lead didn't even pause.
Hold on!
Christie slammed into a higher gear, the engine revving with power. Sand kicked up from impacting bullets, and several more hit the bus to musically ricochet into the darkness.
Head for the Ville!
What?
She glanced at Ryan in the rearview mirror as he dropped a fresh mag into the breech of the Steyr.
Gotta make a firewall!
Gotcha!
A group of SecMen and carrying firebirds crashed through a stand of trees directly in front of them. Pushing for more speed, Christie felt the steering wheel jar as the wag rolled over the screaming men. Now, heading for the Ville, Christie saw flintlocks fire along the top of the wall as she steered right for the small front door. As she got near, the door swung wide, and a SecMen on horseback rode into view. She plowed directly into them. The man and animal mashed into bloody pulp as the bus hurtled their mangled bodies into the doorway. Hitting the brakes, she swung the rear of the vehicle around until it was pointing at the entrance. Jack kicked open the aft door and pushed out a barrel of fuel, then slammed the door shut. Christie hit the gas again and roared off as the companions poured blaster fire onto the 55-gallon drum. They were near the edge of the clearing when a spark from the bullets hitting the barrel finally ignited the fuel and a tremendous fireball blossomed in front of the only exit, the splashed juice dribbling fire along the wooden walls of the Ville. Working the clutch, Christie shifted gears and broached the side road, really building speed now that the wag was on smooth ground. The trees flashed by in a blur until the friends reached a field and turned off the road to cut across the grassland heading for the savanna on the horizon. Behind them, alarm bells rang as blaster fire shook the trees, searching for the escaping outlanders. His food supply exhausted days earlier, Baron Kinnison was nestled in the corner of the cell, standing on the bunk, slowly chewing a warm piece of rat, when there came the sounds of boots in the outside corridor. Swallowing the morsel of food, the Baron wiped his mouth on a sleeve.
Ben drew his blaster and knife. Unfortunately, the blade wasn't as sharp as it had once been. Hampered by the darkness, Kinnison had missed stabbing the scurrying rat several times, damaging the needle tip of the stiletto on the granite floor. In desperation, he lit his only candle and killed as many as he could before the rodents understood what was happening and fled for their lives. Skinning and eating the raw flesh, the Baron then stuffed the corpses into cracks in the walls. With those blocked, no more rats could get into the cell, and Kinnison could sleep for quite a while, recharging his body and clearing his mind. But as time passed, he had been forced to clear the cracks and smear some blood on the floor to entice the rodents back and maintain a steady food supply. The footsteps in the corridor stopped in front of his cell. Kinnison assumed his old position and put both hands into the air, trying to appear as if he were still shackled to the ceiling. Just let the fools get close enough, and he would be out of the stinking prison in a heartbeat. There was a clanging of keys and squealing of the rusty lock. Then the door swung open, and two grinning Sekhmen walked inside.
Ah, he's asleep.
So wake him up.
Kinnison tried not to move as a bucket of seawater splashed on him. The salt sizzled in his open sores, the pain beyond description. But Baron Kinnison moved from an instinct of raw will and slashed open the throat of the first guard, even as the man reached for his blaster. He stumbled away, spraying his life onto the dirty stone walls. With a curse, the second guard tried to shove the door closed, and Kinnison fired the revolver three times, the big bore 45 punching into the door and driving it back, cracking the wrist of the Sekhman holding the latch. The guard could only stare in shock at the bones jutting from his skin when Kinnison charged. He hit the portal at a run, his 500 pounds forcing it open all the way and crushing the guard between the door and wall. Pinned helpless, barely able to breathe, the guard tried to draw his blaster and fire a shot to summon help. But Kinnison savagely sliced along the length of the exposed arm from wrist to elbow, severing tendons and arteries. The guard cried out in pain, dropping the weapon, and the Baron kicked it away for later. Now the urge for revenge filled Kinnison with blind rage, and he pulled the door away, only to slam it on the man several more times, bones cracking and blood gushing, until he was fully satisfied the traitor was aced. Then he dragged the corpse into the cell and looted both guards for more shot, powder, and extra knives. Pausing in the corridor, Kinnison brushed back his wet hair and listened for any response to the fight. There was nothing to hear but the excited murmurs of the other prisoners. They knew something unusual had just occurred and were terrified it would happen to them next. Lifting the dead guard's oil lantern, Kinnison went to the nearest door and turned up the wick to let the prisoner inside clearly see his bandaged face.
The Baron?
The woman gasped through the tangles of her long gray hair. She backed into the corner and began to whimper. Kinnison unlocked the door.
Hello, dear sister. There has been a revolt, and I have been deposed. But fight with me to reclaim the throne, and you will be set free. Free!
But there was no response as the man undid the shackles around her wrists. Still shaking, the Lady Dana Kinnison simply stood there, rubbing the thick calluses on her wrists. Kinnison handed her the ring of keys and a bloody knife.
Free the rest, sister, and head for the armory. Together we'll fight to the dock and get off this hellhole.
Lady Kinnison stood confused, her arms still partially raised from the years of confinement, the endless rapes and beatings having stolen the will to act from her weakened mind.
Well, decide, woman.
The woman looked at him with the dull eyes of an animal, and Kinnison sighed in disappointment, then slit her throat with a backhand slash. Reclaiming the items from her scrawny body, he went to the next cell and made a similar offer to a cousin. The Baron went to every cell, family and friends, continuing down both sides of the dank corridor until he had an army of 30 and 10 more corpses. One of the men looked at him, his face hidden by 20 years of hair.
Give me a blaster. You got 3.
Kinnison knew this was a turning point, so he placed the loaded flintlock into the prisoner's bony hands, then helped the weak man to place the barrel against his own throat. The man's eyes went wide in shock, then gleamed in bestial pleasure.
This is your chance.
The Baron pushed back the hammer until it clicked into place.
Pull the trigger, and everything done to you will be avenged. Or you can use that powder on the next Sekhman you see, and earn yourself a place in the council once more.
Kinnison almost choked on the next words, but he got them out and tried to sound sincere.
I was a fool to mistrust loyal men and have paid the price. Join me in my fight and command troops...